Egbert had not spoken at all, nor did he. But nor had Eva, and it was plain that the tall, thin, ghost-faced Dane was bored with the whole proceedings, for he jerked his head at Ragnar, who left my side and went to talk privately with his lord. The rest of us waited awkwardly. Ivar and Ragnar were friends. An unlikely friendship, for they were very different men. Ivar, all savage silence and grim threat, and Ragnar, open and loud. Yet Ragnar's eldest son served Ivar, and was even now at 18 years old, entrusted with the leadership of some of the Danes left in Ireland, who were holding on to Ivar's lands in that island. It was not unusual for eldest sons to serve another lord. Ragnar had two earl's sons in his ship's crews, and both might one day expect to inherit wealth and position if they learned how to fight. So Ragnar and Ivar now talked, and Eofric shuffled his feet and kept looking at me. Beoka prayed, and King Egbert, having nothing else to do, just tried to look regal. Ivar finally spoke.
"The boy is not for sale," he announced.
"Ransom," Ravan corrected him gently.
Eofric looked furious.
"I came here," he began,
but Ivar interrupted him.
"The boy is not for ransom," he snarled,
then turned and walked from the big chamber. Egbert looked awkward, half rose from the throne, sat again, and Ragnar came and stood beside me.
"You're mine," he said softly. "I just bought you."
"Bought me?"
"My sword's weight in silver," he said.
"Why?"
"Perhaps I want to sacrifice you to Odin," he suggested, then tousled my hair.
"We like you, boy," he said. "We like you enough to keep you. And besides, your uncle didn't offer enough silver. For 500 pieces? I'd have sold you for that." He laughed.
Beoka hurried across the room.
"Are you well?"
he asked me.
"I'm well," I said.
"That thing you're wearing,"
he said, meaning Thor's hammer, and he reached as though to pull it from its thong.
"Touch the boy priest," Ragnar said harshly, "and I'll straighten your crooked eyes before opening you from your gutless belly to your skinny throat."
Beoka, of course, could not understand what the Dane had said, but he could not mistake the tone, and his hand stopped an inch from the hammer. He looked nervous. He lowered his voice so only I could hear him.
"Your uncle will kill you," he whispered.
"Kill me?"
"He wants to be Elderman. That's why he wished to ransom you, so he could kill you."
"But..."
I began to protest.
"Shh," Beoka said. He was curious about my blue hands, but did not ask what had caused them.
"I know you are the Elderman," he said instead, "and we will meet again."
He smiled at me, glanced warily at Ragnar and backed away. Eofric left. I learned later that he'd been given safe passage to and from Eofric, which promise had been kept, but after that meeting he retreated to Bebbanburg and stayed there. Ostensibly he was loyal to Egbert, which meant he accepted the overlordship of the Danes, but they had not yet learned to trust him. That, Ragnar explained to me, was why he had kept me alive.
"I like Bebbanburg," he told me. "I want it."
"It's mine," I said stubbornly.
"And you're mine," he said, "which means Bebbanburg is mine. You're mine, Uhtred, because I just bought you, so I can do whatever I like with you. I can cook you if I want, except there's not enough meat on you to feed a weasel. Now take off that whore tunic, give me the shoes and helmet, and go back to work."
So I was a slave again, and happy. Sometimes when I tell folk my story, they ask why I did not run away from the pagans, why I did not escape southwards into the lands where the Danes did not yet rule. But it never occurred to me to try. I was happy. I was alive. I was with Ragnar, and it was enough.